Chapter 4. Twilight. With his Farderize My Escort, Rand approached the Rudian roof of the Maidens. White stairs, as wide as the tall building, each step a stride deep, ran up to thick columns 20 paces high, black-seeming in the twilight but bright blue by day, and fluted in spirals. The outside of the building was a patterned mosaic of glazed tiles, white and blue in spirals, that appeared endless to the eye, and a huge window of colored glass directly above the columns showed a black-haired woman 15 feet tall, in complicated blue robes, right hand upraised, either to bless or command a halt. Her face was serene and stern at the same time. Whoever she had been, she was surely no Aiel, not with that pale skin and those dark eyes. An Aes Sedai, perhaps. He tapped his pipe out on his boot heel and stuffed it into his coat pocket before starting up the steps. Except for Gaishain, men were not allowed beneath the roof of the Maidens. Not any man, not in any hold in the waste. A chief or a maiden's bloodkin could die trying, though in fact no Aielman would ever think of it. It was the same for any society. Only members and the Gaishain were allowed inside. The two maidens standing guard at the tall bronze doors flashed maiden hand talk at one another, cutting their eyes in his direction as he came through the columns, then shared a small grin. He wished he knew what they had said. Even in as dry a land as the waste, bronze would tarnish with enough time, but Gaishain had polished these doors until they looked new-made. They stood wide open, and the pair of guards made no move to hinder him as he walked through, Adeline and the others on his heels. The wide white-tiled corridors and great rooms inside were full of maidens sitting about on bright cushions, talking, tending to weapons, playing cat's cradle or stones or thousand flowers, an Aiel game that involved laying out patterns of flat bits of stone carved with what seemed 100 different symbols. Of course, a profusion of Gaishain moved smoothly about their chores, cleaning, serving, mending, seeing to oil lamps that ranged from simple glazed pottery to gilded loot from somewhere to the tall stand lamps that had been found in the city. In most rooms, colorful carpets and bright tapestries covered the floors and walls in nearly as many patterns and styles as there were carpets and tapestries. The walls and ceilings themselves were detailed mosaics of forests and rivers and skies that had never been seen in the waste. Young or old, the maidens smiled when they saw him, and some nodded familiarly, or even patted his shoulder. Others called out, asking how he was, had he eaten, would he like the Gaishain to bring him wine or water. He responded briefly, though with answering smiles. He was well and neither thirsty or hungry. He kept walking, not even slowing when he spoke. Slowing would lead inevitably to stopping, and he was not up to that tonight. Farderize Mai had adopted him, after a fashion. Some treated him as a son, others as a brother. Age seemed not to come into it. Women with white in their hair might talk to him as a brother over tea, while maidens no more than a year older than he tried to make sure he wore the proper clothes for the heat. There was no avoiding the mothering. They simply did it, and he could not see how to make them stop, short of using the power against the whole lot of them. He had thought of trying to have another society provide his guards, Shayan and Thal, the Stone Dogs, perhaps, or Aethon Dor, the Red Shields. Ruark had been a Red Shield before becoming chief. Only what reason could he possibly give? Not the truth, certainly. Just thinking about explaining that to Ruark and the others made him uncomfortable. Aiel humor being what it was, even sour old Han would likely break his ribs laughing. Any reason at all would probably offend the honor of every last maiden. At least they rarely mothered him except under the roof, where there was no one to see but themselves, and Gaishain, who knew better than to speak of anything that happened there. The maidens, he had once said, carry my honor. Everyone remembered that, and the maidens were as proud of it as if he had given them all thrones. But it had turned out that they carried it in a manner they chose. Adeline and the other four left him to join their friends, but he was hardly alone as he climbed higher in the building, along curving flights of wide white stairs. He had to answer the same questions at practically every step. No, he was not hungry. Yes, he knew he was not used to the heat yet, and no, he had not spent too much time in the sun. He bore it all patiently, but he did heave a sigh of relief when he reached the second story above the huge window. Here, there were no maidens and no gashain in the broad hallways or on the stairs that led on upward. The bare walls and empty chambers emphasized the absence of people. But after traversing the floors below, he found solitude a blessing. His bedroom was a windowless chamber near the center of the building, one of the few that was not huge, though its ceiling still reached high enough to make height the room's longest dimension. What it had been meant for originally, he had no idea. A mosaic of vines around the small fireplace was the only ornamentation. A servant's room, he would have said, but servants' rooms did not have a door sheathed in bronze, however plain, that he pushed most of the way shut. Gashain had polished the metal to a dull gleam. A few tasseled cushions lay scattered on the blue floor tiles for sitting, and a thick pallet atop bright-layered rugs for sleeping. A simple blue-glazed pitcher of water and a dark green cup sat on the floor near the bed. That was it, except for 2 3-pronged stand lamps, already lit, and a pace-high pile of books in one corner. With a tired sigh, he lay down on the pallet, still in his coat and boots. No matter how he shifted, it was not much softer than sleeping on the bare floor. The night's chill was already seeping into the room, but he did not bother to light the dried cow dung on the hearth. He was readier to face the cold than the smell. Asmodean had tried to show him a simple way to keep the room warm. Simple, but something the man did not have enough strength to do himself. The one time Rand had tried it, he had awakened in the middle of the night, gasping for breath, while the edges of the rugs smoldered from the heat of the floor. He had not made another attempt. He had chosen this building for his quarters because it was whole and near to the plaza. Its great high ceilings gave a semblance of coolness, even to the hottest part of the day, and its thick walls kept out the worst of the cold at night. It had not been the roof of the maidens then, of course. One morning he simply awakened to find it so. Maidens in every room on the first 2 floors, and their guards on the doors. It had taken him a while to realize that they intended the building for their society's roof in Rudian, yet expected him to continue to stay in it. In fact, they were ready to move the roof wherever he went. That was why he had to meet the clan chiefs elsewhere. The best he had been able to manage was to make the maidens agree to stay below the floor where he slept. That had amused them all no end. "Even the Ka Karn is not a king," he reminded himself wryly. Twice already he had moved upward as the numbers of maidens increased. Idly, he tried to calculate how many more could come in before he was sleeping on the roof. That was better than remembering how he had let Moraine get under his skin. He had not meant her to learn his plans until the day the Aiel moved. She knew exactly how to manipulate his emotions, how to make him so angry that he said more than he wanted to. "I never used to get so angry. Why is it so hard to hold on to my temper?" Well, there was nothing she could do to stop him. He did not think there was. He had to remember to be careful around her. His increasing abilities occasionally made him careless toward her, but if he was far stronger, she still knew more than he, even with Osmodian's teaching. In a way, letting Osmodian know his plans was less important than revealing his intentions to the Aes Sedai. "To Moraine, I'm still just a shepherd she can use for the tower's ends. But to Osmodian, I'm the only branch he can hold on to in a flood." Strange to think he could probably trust one of the Forsaken more than he could Moraine. Not that he could trust either very far. Osmodian. If his bonds to the Dark One had shielded him from the taint on Sidene, there had to be another way to do it, or to cleanse it. The trouble was that before they went over to the Shadow, the Forsaken had been among the most powerful Aes Sedai in the Age of Legends, when things the White Tower never dreamed of were commonplace. If Osmodian did not know a way, it probably did not exist. "It has to. There has to be something. I'm not going to just sit still until I go mad and die." That was plain foolish. Prophecy had made a rendezvous for him at Sheol Ghul. When, he did not know. but afterward he would not have to worry about going mad any longer. He shivered and thought about unfolding his blankets. The faint sound of soft-soled footsteps in the hall snapped him upright. I told them, if they can't... The woman who pushed open the door, her arms full of thick wool blankets, was not anyone he expected. Avienda paused just inside the room to regard him with cool blue-green eyes. A more than pretty woman, of an age with him, she had been a maiden until she gave up the spear to become a wise one, not very long ago. Her dark reddish hair still came well short of her shoulders and hardly needed the folded brown scarf to keep it out of her face. She seemed a bit awkward with her brown shawl, a bit impatient with her full gray skirts. He felt a stab of jealousy at the silver necklace she wore, an elaborate string of intricately worked discs, each different. Who gave her that? She would not have chosen it herself. She did not seem to like jewelry. The only other piece she wore was a wide ivory bracelet carved in finely detailed roses. He had given her that, and he was not sure she had forgiven him for it yet. It was foolish of him to be jealous in any case. "I haven't seen you in 10 days," he said. "I thought the wise ones would have tied you to my arm once they found out I'd blocked them out of my dreams." Asmodian had been amused at the first thing he wanted to learn, and then frustrated at how long Rand took to learn it. "I have my training to do, Randall Thor." She would be one of the few wise ones who could channel. That was part of what she was being taught. "I am not one of your wetlander women to stand about so you can look at me whenever you wish." Despite knowing Egwene, and Elaine for that matter, she had an oddly wrong-headed view of what she called wetlander women, and of wetlanders in general. "They are not pleased at what you have done." She meant Amis, Bear, and Melaine, the three wise one dreamwalkers who were teaching her and trying to watch him. Avienda shook her head ruefully. "They were especially not pleased that I had let you know they were walking your dreams." He stared at her. "You told them? But you didn't really say anything. I figured it out myself, and I would have eventually, even if you hadn't let a hint slip out." "Avienda, they told me they could speak to people in their dreams. It was only a step from that." "Would you have had me dishonor myself further?" Her voice was level enough, but her eyes could have started the fire laid on the hearth. "I will not dishonor myself for you or any man. I gave you the trail to follow, and I will not deny my shame. I should have let you freeze." She threw the blankets right on top of his head. He pulled them off and laid them beside him on the pallet while trying to think of what to say. It was Giotto again. The woman was as prickly as a thorn bush. Supposedly she had been given the task of teaching him Aiel customs, but he knew her true job, to spy on him for the wise ones. Whatever dishonor was attached to spying among Aiel, apparently it did not extend to the wise ones. They knew he knew, but for some reason it did not seem to concern them. And as long as they were willing to let matters remain as they were, so was he. For one thing, Avienda was not a very good spy. She almost never tried to find out anything, and her own temper got in the way of making him angry, or guilty, the way Moraine did. For another, she was actually pleasant company sometimes, when she forgot to keep her thorns out. At least he knew who it was that Amis and the others had set to watch him. If it was not she, it would be someone else, and he would be constantly wondering who. Besides, she was never wary around him. Matt, Egwene, even Moraine, sometimes looked at him with eyes that saw the dragon reborn, or at least the danger of a man who could channel. The clan chiefs and the wise ones saw he who comes with the dawn, the man prophesied to break the Aiel like dried twigs. If they did not fear him, they still sometimes treated him like a red adder they had to live with. Whatever Avienda saw, it never stopped her being scathing whenever she chose, which was most of the time. An odd sort of comfort, but compared to the rest, it was a comfort nonetheless. He had missed her. He had even picked flowers from some of the spiny plants around Rudion, bloodying his fingers until he realized he could use the power, and sent them to her 6 times. The maidens had carried the blossoms themselves instead of sending Gaishin. She had never acknowledged them, of course. "Thank you," he said finally, touching the blankets. They seemed a safe subject. "I suppose you can't have too many in the nights here." "Enyla asked me to bring them to you when she found out I was here to see you." Her lips twitched in the beginnings of an amused smile. "A number of the Spear Sisters were worried that you might not be warm enough. I am to see that you light your fire tonight. You didn't last night." Rand felt his cheeks coloring. She knew. Well, she would, wouldn't she? The bloody maidens may not tell her everything anymore, but they don't bother to keep anything from her either. "Why did you want to see me?" To his surprise, she folded her arms beneath her breasts and paced the short length of the room twice before stopping to glare at him. "This was not a regard gift," she said accusingly, shaking the bracelet at him. "You admitted as much."
True, though he thought she might have put a knife in his ribs had he not conceded it.
"It was simply a fool gift from a man who did not know or care what the Spear Sisters might think. Well, this has no meaning either."
She pulled something from her pouch and tossed it onto the pallet beside him.
"It cancels debt between us."
Rand picked up what she had thrown and turned it over in his hands. A belt buckle in the shape of a dragon, ornately made in good steel and inlaid with gold.
"Thank you. It's beautiful."
"Avienda, there is no debt to cancel."
"If you will not take it against my debt," she said firmly, "then throw it away. I will find something else to repay you. It is only a trinket."
"Hardly a trinket. You must have had this made."
"Do not think that means anything, Randall Thor. When I gave up the spear, my spears, my knife,"
unconsciously her hand brushed her belt, where that long-bladed knife used to hang,
"even the points of my arrows were taken from me and handed to a smith to make simple things to give away. Most I gave to friends, but the wise ones had me name the 3 men and 3 women I most hate, and I was told to give each of them a gift made from my weapons with my own hands. Bear says it teaches humility."
Straight-backed and glaring, biting off each word, she looked and sounded anything but humble.
"So you'll not think that means anything?"
"It means nothing," he said, nodding sadly. Not that he wanted it to mean anything, really, but it would have been pleasing to think she might be beginning to see him as a friend. It was plain foolish to feel jealousy over her. I wonder who gave it to her.
"Avienda, was I one of those you hate so much?" "Yes, Randall Thor."
She suddenly sounded hoarse. For a moment, she turned her face away, eyes shut and quivering.
"I hate you with all my heart. I do, and I always will."
He did not bother to ask why. Once he had asked her why she disliked him and practically had his nose snapped off. She had not told him, though. But this was more than a dislike she sometimes seemed to forget. "If you really hate me," he said reluctantly, "I will ask the wise ones to send someone else to teach me."
"No!"
"But if you..."
"No!"
If anything, her denial was even more fierce this time. She planted her fists on her hips and lectured as if she meant to drive every word home in his heart.
"Even if the wise ones allowed me to stop, I have toe, obligation and duty, to my near sister Elaine to watch you for her. You belong to her, Randall Thor. To her and no other woman. Remember that."
He felt like throwing up his hands. At least this time she was not describing to him how Elaine looked without any clothes. Some Aiel customs took even more getting used to than others. He sometimes wondered if she and Elaine had agreed on this watching between them. He could not believe it, but then again, even women who were not Aiel were odd as often as not. More than that, he wondered who Avienda was supposed to be protecting him from. Except for the maidens and the wise ones, Aiel women seemed to look at him half as prophecy made flesh, and thus not really flesh at all, and half as a blood snake loose among children. The wise ones were nearly as bad as Moraine when it came to trying to make him do what they wanted, and the maidens he did not want to think about. The whole thing made him furious. "Now you listen to me. I kissed Elaine a few times, and I think she enjoyed it as much as I did, but I am not promised to anyone. I'm not even sure she wants that much from me anymore." In the space of a few hours, she had written him two letters. One called him the dearest light of her heart before going on to make his ears burn, while the other named him a cold-hearted wretch she never wanted to see again, and then proceeded to rip him up one side and down the other. Better than Avienda ever had. Women were definitely odd. "I don't have time to think about women anyway. The only thing on my mind is uniting the Aiel, even the Shido if I can. He cut off with a groan, as the very last woman he could have hoped for swayed into the room in a clatter of jewelry, carrying a silver tray with a blown glass flagon of wine and two silver cups. A diaphanous red silk scarf wrapped around Isendra's head did nothing to hide her palely beautiful heart-shaped face. Her long dark hair and dark eyes never belonged to any Aiel. Her full pouting lips were curved enticingly, until she saw Avienda. Then the smile faded to a sickly thing. Aside from the scarf, she had on a dozen or more necklaces of gold and ivory, some set with pearls or polished gems. As many bracelets weighted each wrist, and even more bunched around her ankles. That was it. She wore not another thing. He made himself keep his eyes strictly on her face, but even so his cheeks felt hot. Avienda looked like a thunderhead about to spit lightning. Isendra, like a woman who had just learned she was to be boiled alive. Rand wished he were in the pit of doom, or anywhere but there. Still, he got to his feet. He would have more authority looking down on them than the other way around. "Avienda," he began, but she ignored him. "Did someone send you with that?" she asked coldly. Isendra opened her mouth, the intended lie plain on her face, then gulped and whispered, "No." "You have been warned about this, Sorda." A Sorda was a kind of rat, especially sly, according to the Aiel, and good for absolutely nothing. Its flesh was so rank that even cats seldom ate the ones they killed. "Adeline thought the last time would have taught you." Isendra flinched and swayed as if about to faint. Rand gathered himself. "Avienda, whether she was sent or not doesn't matter. I'm a little thirsty, and if she was kind enough to bring me wine, she should be thanked for it." Avienda glanced coolly at the two cups and raised her eyebrows. He took a deep breath. "She should not be punished just for bringing me something to drink." He was careful not to look at the tray himself. "Half the maidens under the roof must have asked if I..."
"She was taken by the maidens for theft from maidens, Randall Thor."
Avienda's voice was even colder than it had been for the other woman.
"You have meddled too much already in the business of Fardar Azmai. More than you should have been allowed. Not even the Kaa Karn can thwart justice. This is no concern of yours."
He grimaced and let it go. Whatever the maidens did to her, Isendra certainly had coming. Just not for this. She had entered the waste with Hadnan Kadir, but Kadir had not cracked his teeth when the maidens took her for stealing the jewelry that was now all they let her wear. It had been all Rand could do to keep her from being sent off to Shara, tethered like a goat, or else dispatched naked toward the dragon wall with one water bag. Watching her plead for mercy once she realized what the maidens intended, he had not been able to make himself stay out of it. Once he had killed a woman who meant to kill him, but the memory still burned. He did not think he would ever be able to do it again, even with his life in the balance. A foolish thing, with female Forsaken likely seeking his blood or worse, but there it was. And if he could not kill a woman, how could he stand by and let a woman die? Even if she deserved it? That was the rub. In any land west of the Dragon Wall, Isendra would face the gallows or the headsman's block for what he knew about her. About her and Kadir, and probably most of the merchant's men, if not all. They were dark friends, and he could not expose them. not even if they were aware that he knew. If any one of them was revealed as a dark friend... Isendra endured as best she could, because even being a servant and kept naked was better than being tied hand and foot and left for the sun. But none would keep silent once Moraine had her hands on them. Aes Sedai had no more mercy for dark friends than for anyone else. She would loosen their tongues in short order. And Asmodian had come into the waste with the merchant's wagons, too, just another dark friend, so far as Kadir and the others knew, though one with authority. No doubt they thought he had taken service with the Dragon Reborn on orders from some still higher power. To keep his teacher, to keep Moraine from trying to kill both of them, very probably, Rand had to keep their secret. Luckily, no one questioned why the Aiel kept such a close watch on the merchant and his men. Moraine thought it was the usual Aiel suspicion of outsiders in the Waste, magnified by them being in Ruidian. She had had to use all of her persuasion to make the Aiel let Kadir and his wagons into the city. The suspicion was there. Ruark and the other chiefs likely would have set guards even if Rand had not asked. And Kadir just seemed happy he did not have a spear through his ribs. Rand had no idea how he was going to resolve the situation, or if he could. It was a fine mess. In Gleeman's stories, only villains got caught in a cleft stick like this. Once she was sure that he was not going to try to interfere further, Avienda turned her attention back to the other woman.
"You may leave the wine."
Isendra half knelt gracefully to set the tray beside his palate, a peculiar grimace on her face. It took Rand a moment to recognize an attempt to smile at him without letting the Aiel woman see.
"And now you will run to the first maiden you can find," Avienda went on, "and tell her what you have done." "Run, Sorda!"
Moaning and wringing her hands, Isendra ran in a great rattle of jewelry. As soon as she was out of the room, Avienda rounded on him.
"You belong to Elaine. You have no right to try luring any woman, but especially not that one."
"Her?" Rand gasped.
"You think I..." "Believe me, Avienda, if she were the last woman on Earth, I'd still stay as far from her as I could run."
"So you say." She sniffed.
"She has been switched 7 times, 7, for trying to sneak to your bed. She would not persist like that without some encouragement. She faces Fardarai's my justice, and she is no concern of even the Ka'akarn. Take that as your lesson for today on our customs. And remember, you belong to my near sister."
Without letting him get a word in, she stalked out, wearing such a look that he thought Isendra might not survive if Avienda caught up to her. Letting out a long breath, he got up long enough to put the tray and its wine in a corner of the room. He was not about to drink anything Isendra brought him.
7 times she's tried to reach me?
She must have learned that he interceded for her. No doubt, to her way of thinking, if he was willing to do that for a smoky look and a smile, what might he do for more? He shivered at the thought as much as the increasing cold. He would rather have a scorpion in his bed. If the maidens failed to convince her, he might tell her what he knew about her. That should put an end to any schemes. Snuffing the lamps, he crawled onto his pallet in the dark, still booted and fully dressed, and fumbled around until he pulled all of the blankets over him. Without the fire, he suspected he really would be grateful to Avienda before morning. Setting the wards of spirit that shielded his dreams from intrusion was almost automatic to him now, but even as he did it, he chuckled to himself. He could have gotten into bed and then put out the lamps with the power. It was the simple things that he never thought of doing with the power. For a time, he lay waiting for his body's heat to warm the inside of the blankets. How the same place could be so hot by day and so cold by night was beyond him. Sticking one hand under his coat, he fingered the half-healed scar on his side. That wound, the one that Moraine could never completely heal, was what would kill him eventually. He was sure of it. His blood in the rocks of Shael Ghul. That was what the prophecies said.
"Not tonight. I won't think of that tonight. I have a little time yet, but if the seals can be shaved with a knife now, do they still hold as strongly? No, not tonight."
The inside of the blankets was becoming a little warmer, and he shifted around, trying and failing to find a comfortable way to lie. I should have washed, he thought drowsily. Egwene was probably in a warm sweat tent right that minute. Half the time he used one, a fistful of maidens tried to come in with him, and nearly rolled in the ground laughing when he insisted on them staying outside. It was bad enough having to undress and dress in the steam. Sleep finally came, and with it, safely protected dreams, safe from the wise ones or anyone else. Not protected from his own thoughts, though. Three women invaded them continually. Not Isendra, except in a brief nightmare that nearly woke him. By turns, he dreamed of Elaine and Min and Avienda. By turns and together. Only Elaine had ever looked at him as a man, but all three saw him as who he was, not what he was. Aside from the nightmare, they were all pleasant dreams.